Ateret Ami is looking for you. Right or wrong?
Ateret Ami is looking for me?
You know what that is, right?
But why is it looking for me?
I'm saying they want Russians to know how to teach.
I don't know how to teach yet. But they do.
Do me a favor, give this to Herbie Maltz. Okay. Kala Kavod, I'm so proud of what
you're doing.
What
was wisdom for us about Eli?
I'm going next week. You're on that same, you're going with the same group?
Where are you going?
Next week, there are no shiurim, Sunday, Monday. I'm not going to Chariv here, but I'll tell you later. I have to get to Eilat. I'll explain
you,
why.
You going with the Cohens?
Yeah.
Are you going to Beit Yosef?
Whatever, with the Cohens. Okay,
well,
let's.
We're going to be there.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, there'll be a lot of good Jews there. But there's no class next Sunday, Monday, but afterwards the year rolls normal. You got the...
Thank you very much.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
It's very funny, some of the information. I can give a whole shiur on it.
Did you watch the DVD?
No, no. There's a DVD attached to it, too. I didn't...
No, the Michael Levine DVD.
Oh, of course I watched it. Yeah, of course. Years ago, of course.
Is there ever suggesting I should leave Eretz Yisrael for this?
Chas v'chalila, I just want to tell you, they need people like you, but if you're in Eretz Yisrael, that's a million times better. Okay, let's get down to work. We have a very fascinating shiur today. You'll see there's a tshuva involved that the people can't believe it actually happened. First of all, today is Sunday, February 12th, 2017. Hard to believe what we're heading for. It's like 100 years since Baruch Hashem, since Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik was born. If not mistaken, was born 1917, I believe so. If not 1918, and it's 100 years since Rabbi Chaim Brisker died. Wow, how time is marching on. Now, I want to say hello to the wonderful students in front of me and to everyone listening across the wide expanse of Jewish settlement in the world. We're dealing with Reb Moshe. We're dealing with a very delicate topic. We're dealing with a topic that is in the news today, and I'll come to it later, and the whole question of conversion and what goes on in modern times. As we saw, Melamed Lahoil was the first one to really accentuate very sadly the reality of the world, that we from Jews are a minority today. Most Jews are far from frum, and they view us as quaint, ancient. Now that, believe it or not, is starting to change. It's a result, first of all, in the state of Israel. We have over 2 million Shomer Shabbos Jews, and the statistics grow better weekly, daily. Outside of Israel, even the New York Times has to acknowledge today that the president's daughter is a Shomeret Shabbat. So it's starting to change to a small degree outside of Israel, to a much bigger degree within Israel. But what is the status of people who convert and they're not sincere? And the Melamed Lahoil gets involved with the whole question of a Mechal Shabbos. Is he a Jew? Isn't he a Jew? And you see that the Melamed Lahoil already states, quoting the Shaul Umeshiv, that Bizman Hazeh, the average Jew, even if he's a Mechal Shabbos, it's not rebellion against God, it's not rebellion against Judaism, it's simply that's what the masses believe Judaism is about, a little traditionalism. But there's really no need to be Shomer Shabbos, Kashrut, Taharat Mishpacha. A Jew who does that is a tzaddik, but he chooses to do it. The concept that we're obligated to do it does not exist in modern times. When it comes to conversion, Reb Moshe takes the same approach, and he elaborates even further, as we have spoken about, and I'll show you today. Reb Moshe's exact words are unbelievably insightful. But in addition to Reb Moshe with conversion, you have Reb Chaim Moshe Kashensky, the Achiezer. And the Achiezer is not a small matter, where he talks about conversion, he talks about people who are not Makabel Mitzvot, but really maybe they mean to be Makabel Mitzvot, later they become Mumarim the Tayavon, that will not abolish the conversion, And while nobody is happy about it, b'di'aved kulam geirim heim. And that's the Gemara in Yevamot, and that seems to be the way the Rambam paskins in Hilchot Isuri Bia, and that's the way Reb Chaim Moshe paskins. So you see that you have three tremendous achronim who are speaking the same language. Now, I want to go further, and I want to raise another question that is very, very much in the news. I'm quoting now from the Igrot Moshe Yoredeya. It's the first time that Reb Moshe did Yoredeya, and it's Siman Kuf Samach, 160. The tshuva is from 1950. So it's quite important, too, to date the tshuva, to see Reb Moshe. He's talking about America after the Holocaust. Religious observance was at an all-time low. 1950s, the conservative movement was conquering America. The Reform conquered it before World War II. After World War II, that decade, it was hard to find a shul with a mechitza. Endless Orthodox shuls outside of the big cities and even in the big cities took down the mechitzat. It was totally hefker. That's when the Rav went public about the mechitza. There were court cases at the end of the 1950s, and the pendulum starts to swing the other way. But what does Reb Moshe deal with here? What happened in Israel? Recently, a soldier was killed who was coming aliyah from the Ukraine, I believe, Russian Orthodox. And he never converted. I don't know what the family story is. I think it was a chayal bodeh. I don't believe his parents were here. I think they brought them in from the Ukraine, or brought his mother in for the funeral. I don't know who was not Jewish in the family, but he was not Jewish and not an observant Jew. Now, just think for one moment. These are people, and it's not the first case, of a soldier who gives his life for the state of Israel, gives his life that we can sit here, b'menuchat ha-nefesh, and is killed, for the sake of the Jewish people. Kedushat Hashem, Kedushat Ha'am, call it what you wish. There's a whole tshuva from the Chatam Sofer, which I dealt with many years ago, if you're allowed to call the Holocaust victims Kedoshim. And according to the Chatam Sofer, absolutely. So here he fits all the criteria, except he's not Jewish. And at the funeral, there actually was a Russian Orthodox priest. I don't know if you saw the picture. And the soldiers gave him Kavod Malachim. Now, that's fine. Give Kavod Malachim. Go to the funeral. When Churchill was buried, I told you, Ben-Gurion was in England. It was on a Saturday. He walked from the hotel. I mean, I was a kid then, but it left such an impression. He walked from the hotel to the funeral. You have to give Ben-Gurion credit. He would never, if he had to go to a shul, it had to be an Orthodox shul. He would not go into a Reform temple in America or anywhere else where he visited, because he understood very well that they've led to total assimilation, total breakdown. I know people who would have been Shomer Shabbos if not for their conservative rabbis, and they said to me, our rabbi told us it's permissible. Well, it's permissible to drive Shabbos. Just think for a moment what we're saying. Had the rabbi said, no, you cannot drive, you have to live closer to the shul, they would have moved closer to the shul. These were good people who came out of Minsk with a lot of good Jewish feeling. But they really believe, you know, conservative reform. And where do you bury this individual? That's the problem. If you've studied the sugya it basically begins in Sanhedrin, but you find other references in Shas, Dalet Mitot Beitin, people who are killed in different ways, you're not allowed to bury them next to each other, because one is a bigger Russia than the other. Right or wrong? You're not allowed to bury a Russia near a tzaddik. Well, you're certainly not allowed to bury a Jew near a non-Jew. And even though the Gemara says that we do chesed with the Gentiles, we give them charity, it's an open Gemara, we're gomel chesed, we bury their dead, it doesn't mean that we bury their dead in a Jewish cemetery. It means that if this just happened in Lakewood, that a Afro-American young boy was killed by a car, and the Lakewood community reached out to that family, it'll be a miracle if they don't want to convert when it's over. And they arranged the burial, and they were they consoled them, and they gave them support, and they're friendly, and they invited them, and they did whatever they could. You know, people lose a child in a car accident. And this is our pi halacha, that we have to be generous of spirit to help out Gentiles. Ein hachinam. You see, in the state of Israel, all the operations we have done on Syrian wounded from the war. And this is l'kaved l'tiferet, Medina Yisrael. Could be, over the years, one of these people whose life we saved will go on to become the prime minister of Syria and understand what the Jewish people are all about. But it's mamish l'kaved l'tiferet. Now, what do? Where do you bury these people? So a tremendous outcry came up years ago with the Russian immigration. A lot of Russian soldiers of Russian origins have fallen in defense of Medina Yisrael. A lot. There are plenty of Americans that have fallen, plenty of Russians. So there was a tremendous outcry that you have to bury them in a respectable place, not just on the outskirts of the cemetery. If you go to Mount Freedom, no one knows Mount Freedom in New Jersey. That was one of the Baron Hirsch settlements in the United States. And I'm talking about Baron Hirsch 120, 130 years ago, put a fortune of money. He was not a Zionist, so it's not like Rothschild or Montefiore. He put a fortune of money in South America. In America, Jews should be farmers. If they'll be farmers, they'll have panasa, and the world will have respect for them. So in Vineland, when I went into the rabbinate in 1961, my classmate and good friend Bernie Cohn, he left the rabbinate a few years later. He's a professor of criminology. I think he's retired today. He's my age. But Bernie was a fabulous guy, and we were very close, and that's the story I tell. He was not one of the top guys in the yeshiva. You know, we had, I don't want to mention names, but we had the top guys in the shayur and close to the rav. I mean, my chavruta, Jerry Blau, for instance, others. So when he goes into the rabbinate, he's going to UFP, graduate school, and he wins all the awards. He's studying sociology, criminology. I say, Bernie, what the heck happened to you? You became a goon. What happened? You weren't one of the top guys. Cut it out. You worked hard to pass the Oratay exam. You weren't a genius. Here you are. He says, Arnie, compared to the Rav, all these courses in sociology and criminology are a catwalk. You follow? I'm quoting him word by word. A catwalk. So I go to visit him in Mount Freedom. I hope I have the right community. Maybe I mean it. Maybe it's a different name. Freehold. Maybe it's Freehold. No, I think it's
Mount Freedom.
Mount Freedom. Mount Freedom. Okay, Freehold is elsewhere. Przensky, Jerry Przensky was there. Zeicher Zichrono Levracha. So I went to visit my friends who got smicha with me in the rabbinate. We can, you know, we confided in each other. We learned from each other. So I go to visit Bernie, and Bernie says, come on, I'll show you something interesting. He takes me to the cemetery. All right, Malcolm, myself, Bernie, and Barbara, we go to the cemetery. I write about him in Washington. He's the guy that Herbert S. Goldstein in the homiletic class says, Cohn, how old are you? And you're not married? And being a wise guy, Bernie says, you give me a girl and I'll marry her. Next week, Rabbi Goldstein comes in with a name, a tzettel, gives him a tzettel. How do you say that in English? A little piece of paper. It's a shtickel papier. A little piece. Gives him a tzettel with the name of a girl, Barbara Hecht. I think her maiden name was Hecht, if I recall, with her phone number. And P.S., a few months later, they got married. So that's Baruch Hashem. Many decades later, very happily married, wonderful children, grandchildren. You got to be Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein. So Bernie takes it. And outside, as we approach the cemetery, I see a whole batch of graves next to each other, far from the cemetery. a two-minute walk. I say to Bernie, Maza, what's this? He says, now you'll understand. These are people they couldn't bury or didn't want to bury in the regular cemetery. And he told me he knows each one. He was told the tradition. This one was a guy, a questionable conversion. This one was a guy married to a Jew. This one was a murderer. This one was a thief. This one was a prostitute. Unbelievable. That cemetery. Now, you try to do this in the army. There was a tremendous outcry led by some of the, we have no mazel. There's one guy today, Elazar Stern. He was a major general in the army. He's a politician today. He wears a big kippah. He is so anti the rabbinate, so anti our concepts of halacha. Oh, he's carrying on now. Why? What did the army do after the problem first came up? The rabbinate made a decision that in every military cemetery, there is a very honorable section for people of doubtful lineage. We're not sure if they're Jews, semi-converted, not converted, but people who died fighting for Am Yisrael. So in every military cemetery, there is a separate section. This person was buried now, was the first person buried in the cemetery. He was buried in the non-Jewish section. He was the first person buried there. You don't know what's going on in the weekend papers. Elazar Stern is hysterical. It's not mechubedik. Why can't he be buried with his friends? Why can't he be buried with his comrades? Why does he have to be buried in a different section, even though he admits...
Does he have a religious background?
He's a graduate of Nativ Meir. What do you mean, does he have a religious background? Many people wear yarmulkes, and you know what's going on now with women rabbis, and you know that my own Talmud, who I taught in the Kollel, and I taught in BMT, and taught here for 15 years, came out now that ordaining women is like the freeing of slaves during the Civil War. No. Harry Hefter, Rabbi Hefter, Herzl Hefter. So you understand people have different points of view. What I think about it is not for publication, but that's not for now. Let's stick to the topic. Now Reb Moshe has a real problem. The Rav of Canton, Ohio, Harab Chaim Eliezer, you should know I taught members of his family. He was Israeli Bamakar, I believe. In Mechala, the Israeli division, I taught people from this family. And he turns to Reb Moshe. You have these people who converted by a conservative rabbi, by a reform rabbi, and they die. The family wants them buried in the synagogue cemetery. And you're dealing with Balabatim. Imagine you're going to tell the Balabatim that this family that gave tens of thousands of dollars over the years to the shul, you're going to say, we're going to bury you near the fence. We're going to bury you outside the fence. We're going to bury you outside the cemetery. The rabbi will have a rebellion on his hands. Pshuto kamashma'o. And here's the question with quite a description that the rabbi, a conservative, he writes it out Rav Moshe in Yiddish, with two vavs, with an aleph, with two more vavs, with an ayin. You follow? If you write Yiddish, you have to, the vowels are the letters. So there was a conversion with the conservative rabbi, and there certainly was no Kabbalah mitzvah. The conservative rabbi himself is a Mechalel Shabbos. And the tefillah, here you come to the problem that has come up already with the Chovevei Torah. How do you have a Beit Din observe a woman in mikvah? So I can tell you, as I told you, I've been on the, but they didn't figure it. The mikvah lady calls you in when it's like one split second. The woman, all you see is hair. A little bit here, the woman is totally submerged in the water. But okay, I can understand the problem. The rabbinate today is not what I knew it to be, plain and simple. They just tell me another scandal broke. Stephanie just told me a scandal broke in Bethel yesterday. Last night in the news, there was a scandal in Bnei Brak. I mean, it's beyond words. But it's what I told Yomo this morning in different contexts. people today have no belief in God, no belief that Ayin Rawa, no. They do mitzvah, they're Shomer Shabbos, Kashrut, it is mitzvah Anashim Melumada. Out of habit, everyone is Shomer Shabbos, I'm Shomer Shabbos too. Everyone is Makpid and Kashrut, I'm Makpid and Kashrut too. But the reality of the Ribbono Shel Olam is not there. And you see, comments, I can tell you, a good percentage of people that you think are from don't believe that God gave us Eretz Yisrael, that God cares about us. I just saw one of the Haredi politicians made a statement. You have to rip Kriya to read what this man said. And this represents a very degel hateira, nishta degel and nishteira. Anyway, be it as it may, the conversion was done before three women. Could you imagine? It wasn't done in front of the three men. Ela lifnei nisheihem. So Rabbi Moshe Rabbein, by the way, this is the heart of the problem. I've said it, and even in the RCA statement, it was not stated properly. The biggest problem with calling women rabbis is that you give the world the impression they can do everything a male rabbi can do.
What year is this?
1950. That they can do, 1950.
There was no issue of women rabbis in 1950.
No, I'm talking about today. Turn here, whatever you wish. Today, no, I'm saying that what's the problem with women rabbis, that they can't do everything. In other words, if women are going to be rabbis, they're going to form a beit din to watch a conversion. They can't do that. Eidat l'kiyum davar, a beit din, women cannot do. And this is the problem by using the title rabbi. You follow?
What was this issue?
This issue, the three women observed the conversion. The woman in the mikveh was not three rabbis. No one asked her in the mikveh. The rabbis didn't ask her anything. Three women observed the woman in the mikveh.
In 1950?
1950.
Did they didn't know anything?
No, they're conservative rabbi.
Oh, conservative.
They understand. So the men went into the other room and the women took over. So Reb Moshe says, this is absolutely not a good conversion. And he quotes the Gemara in Bukharat. It's a Gemara, I think I quoted to Daf Lamed, that if you convert on the nut, you're leaving out one part of Torah. One part of Torah. That alone invalidates the conversion. And here, conservative rabbi and all that's happening, they're leaving out the heart of Torah. Kabbalat ol malchut shemayim. The rabbi says it's not a conversion. And then here Reb Moshe says, raises the problem again. The truth of the matter is, and he's very clear here, very sharp. The truth of the matter is, I don't like any of the conversions being done, even by Orthodox rabbis. And he says, you know, Anam Sahadei, we are quite certain that we see all these conversions, it is not really a proper conversion. They're not going to observe. They're going to be like all the other Jews. And he says, even though they say we're makabel the mitzvah, but in their heart we know it is not true. There is no Kabbalah mitzvah. And he says, all right, true. Maybe there's an exception. Maybe we shouldn't, I'll use halachic language, we should be done the would-be convert lakat schut. Are you okay? You're walking in like you're looking. There's plenty of where to sit. And we now have a minyan here. No one is to leave, including Yomo, so we can daven marav lakavad ulatif eret. Do you see the Siddurim? I don't see Siddurim on the side. They are there. Okay, good. So, Reb Moshe says, and even though maybe 1 out of 100 will be a good convert, he says, but still, let's not fool ourselves. But then Reb Moshe says, and these words are golden. It's everything he explained before, everything we've explained. He says, maybe it is a good conversion. According to Gemara in Shabbos, Hamid Gayev Bein Akim, Gemara Daf Samach Zayin, everything we spoke about, doesn't know about Shabbat. And the average person today, listen to Reb Moshe's words, the average Jew thinks to be a Shomer Shabbos hu rak hidur ba'alma. It's only a frumkeit. You have choice. And if you're not Shomer Shabbos, you're also a good Jew. And my dear students, I can tell you, this is the way I grew up in the Bronx. There probably were, you can check it out, maybe a million Jews in the Bronx at the time that I grew up. A million Jews. I just, this Menachem Avil, Rabbi Danny Guttenmacher, so why you miss Macher, a wonderful Talmud Chacham, a Rebbe, he's a Rebbe in the Steinsaltz High School for decades already, teaches in Herzog. A wonderful individual, Rabbi Dr. Danny Guttmach. He's married to a student of mine from an American from Michlala. They live here many decades already. Kanayin Hara, wonderful people. So Danny was talking about his father was one of the organizers, his late father who just died, of the Young Israel of Hillcrest, Queens. You have to know, Hillcrest, Queens today is a major center of Torah. The conservative temples have all gone under. They combined, they formed one temple with a church. They got rid of the rabbi because he was too frum. And they have a woman rabbi, a woman president, and a woman executive director with a tremendous parking lot on Shabbos where all the old conservative people who don't have where to go drive there on Shabbos.
Non-Jews can become members of the synagogue.
Non-Jews, unbelievable. Anyway, so... One second. So that when they organized, so Danny, when we were being Menachem Avil, he said, "Oh, when the Yisrael began, how hard Rabbi Kowalski worked." He said, "Most of the people were not Shomer Shabbos." He said, "They all went to work on Saturday, half a day." I said to them, "That's exactly the Bronx. Everyone went to work half a day," and the attitude was, "Yes, it's wonderful if there are a few Shomer Shabbos Jews." But that's a hidur bi'alma, just what Reb Moshe says. All right, now Reb Moshe gets involved in the question. This poor rabbi has told the Balabatim, we cannot bury this Jew among Jews. This is the whole concept aimed kovrin tzadik etzel Russia. And in simple language, a Jew has more kedusha than a non-Jew. And by the way, this also is under challenge today from people in Chovin Vei Torah. It's not nice. How can you say such things? A Jew has more kedusha. The Baal Tanya, you know, goes as far as even to say the neshama, the different. All right, I don't know if that's correct, but that's what the Baal Tanya says. And I often say when people ask me, how can you say the neshama, the difference? So the truth is I would answer that every convert was a Hasinai, it's a medrash, and I believe it with all my heart and soul. When people convert, you gotta look into the lineage. You'll find that they had great-great-grandparents, Jews, who pleading before God, give me some zeka. Someone comes back to Yiddishkeit. Their souls were at Mount Sinai. But even where we don't have to go so far, I say very simply, after the Holocaust, you question whether the souls of the Germans are the same as the souls of born Jews. Could you imagine the Holocaust? Just think for a minute. Abetted by France, Hungary, England, how many countries? Unbelievable. But what does this poor rabbi do? The Balabatim are telling him, Rabbi, if you embarrass us and this family, and you'd understand, his life is on the line. So Reb Moshe goes into earlier Tshuvot, which unfortunately these problems came up before. And Reb Moshe uses the word Talmidei missionaries. And what it means, Jews who were grabbed by missionaries. Davi, missionaries are always out to convert Jews. You should know that even in Israel, you have no idea how many battles were fought until the Knesset passed the law outlawing proselytizing in the state of Israel. Don't think the law is totally enforced. Like any other law, it's only as good as the people who enforce it. And missionaries, Talmidei HaMishneh, What does that mean? Talmidei HaMishneh, people who converted, plain and simple. So they were buried among the Jews. Now here's probably less of a problem, because these are people who were born Jewish. And you all know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Yisrael af apishachata Yisrael hu, which we spoke about, as the Lubavitcher Rebbe would say, kumadubar, vimim geret, as we spoke about when we spoke about Brother Daniel. Okay? So
that was the case of the guy who wanted to make Aliyah, the priest?
Yeah. Yisrael af apishachata Yisrael hu. It's a Gemara, I believe it's Mem Dalet in Sanhedrin. A rose among thorns remains a rose, to quote the Gemara. So there, what the Achronim say is, make a distance between the place where the missionary converted people are buried and the Jews are buried. And just as they permitted Jews to be buried near them, but right, not right on top of them, you should do the same thing. And he says, you should tell any frum Jew to be buried 8 amot away. Chet amot. They quote the Mashar, Hagot Mashar. And 8 amot already is like considered a mechitza. It's a distance. And this is what you have to tell your balabatim. And if they're Shomrei Torah, warn them. And even if they're not Shomrei Torah, make it clear that if you have someone who is not totally Jewish or slightly Jewish, or we're in doubt whether they're Jewish, you cannot be buried right next to them. Now, what he's telling the rabbi is, don't lose your job over this issue. This is the solution. Not a happy solution, but we can't do better than this. But to lose your job, it's not worth it. B'di'evid, we can be samach 8 amot away. Now, 8 amot is quite a distance, so it's not so simple. You have to be certain that there's room and space, and the grave that you're reserving is 8 amot away. Figure it out, and amah is, let's say, 18 inches, 16 inches, various measurements, eight is a nice few feet, we'll put it that way. But then at the end of the tshuva, Reb Moshe says something very interesting, which was when I was in the rabbinate, spoke with the Rav, I did exactly the same thing. In all these cases, try to convince them to reconvert. It's not that they're going to become real Shema Mitzvot. We know the reality. But at least if they go through the form, we can be d'yevid, accepted as a norm. You follow what I'm saying? That's what we're talking about? Because Nebuch, these poor people don't know that Torah demands commands. The modern mind doesn't want to hear such words. The modern person is free to decide whatever he wants. Go into university, teach you how to think, how to decide. The concept that a modern person is limited, he's limited what he can eat, how he works, what his sexual activity can be. That's, to a modern person, that's apikorsis, plain and simple. You understand, Simon? You got to understand their mindset. The concept of surrender to a higher authority is totally lacking. And as the Rav Moshe says, better to do the form. You know, the Kabbalat Mitzvah is not going to be a real Kabbalat Mitzvah. But at least they will go to mikvah. At least there will be a beitin. Hatafet Amrit, probably the conservative rabbi did. B'di'evid, all right, it's a whole machlokes achronim. But B'di'evid, you can be samach, there was Hatafet Amrit. It could be, in many cases, there was a mila, but he was a goy gomer when he had the mila. But at least then, you can bury with peace of mind. Very, very fascinating tshuva. And Reb Moshe remains Reb Moshe.
So why isn't this accepted today?
You took the words out of my mouth, Michael. Coming back to Michael's question and Yitzchak's question. So, sometimes, one second, let me put it back properly so I don't lose my notes. Very powerful question. State of Israel is shaking. The machleket that has gone on here with conversion, the way Reb Chaim Brookman was publicly embarrassed, I still can't get over it. I know Reb Chaim Brookman many, many, many decades. And I can tell you, I don't know many bigger tzaddikim than Chaim Brookman. We don't have to go into details, his personal life, his wife, the family they raised, the children they adopted, and that's beyond words. What are you telling me? Tzaddik Yisod Olam. But what went on here, I had the schud that I was invited to a wedding. So it was difficult. I'm older, but I felt I had to go to this wedding. It involved Russia, and Chaim Kedrukman was there, and they asked me to speak at under the chuppah. He was Masada Kedushin, and I spoke afterwards. And I spoke about Chaim Khan. He was in tears. You know, I had this schut that I was able to bring him some solace. I will say, this couple didn't even survive a month of marriage. He had become a Chabadnik. It was a mismatch. Yomo, please don't listen. A mismatched couple. And they didn't even survive a month. And Malka would say to me, I told you not to go. You wasted your time. You wasted your health, your effort, your energy. I said, honey, you're wrong. I brought solace to Chaim Kedrukman. Oh, she said, okay. She got it. By the way, both are remarried today, very happily. But I've seen that when someone who is mainstream Torah dick and someone who is a makubal, to marry someone who's more of a makubal, you have to be on a different level. It has to be attuned, not so simple. My dear students, I explained to you last week at the very end of this year that there's a whole process happening in Israel. And in the Haredi world today, you have a movement underway. It's all over the Haredi world. It's in Belz, it's in Chabad, it's in Panovich, it's in Hebron. Where you see Haredim, it's in Shas, etc. The Haredi Jew today, the kid who's 15, 16, 17, many of them are very happy and very proud to live in the state of Israel. More than that, they're very anxious to leave the ghetto. They're no longer afraid of leaving the ghetto. You walk into Machon Lev, I daven mincha there today, there are guys walking around with kapatas and bekishes and all types of payas and all types of hats and kippot, etc. You can now remain from outside the ghetto. This was not true in the 50s, the 60s. It's tremendous change today. And then a normal person feels a deep responsibility for the army, for Tzva Haganah Yisrael. Plain and simple. Without the army, we would not be sitting here.
All right? Demonstrating all over?
Relax, relax. So a movement has started. Many of these youngsters want to serve in the army and remain firm in the army. And they want to go to university. They don't want to be poor. They don't want to be schnurrers. Have you ever been in Chutz Laretz on a Sunday? I've been all over the world on Sundays. And I can tell you, Sadna di Arachatu, whether it's London, Manchester, Melbourne, Sydney, Lawrence or Beverly Hills, Toronto or Montreal, Israeli schnurrers, Haredim, at least in outlook and dress, knock on your door, they have a child to marry, a child to do this, they have to accomplish this, someone needs an operation, they need money. I met a guy in Kew Gardens Hills, schnurring, his wife needs an operation. I looked at him. In Israel, there's health insurance automatically for every citizen of the state of Israel. What are you schnurring? An operation is not a rare. He ran away from me, you know. He saw already, I know too much. I would undermine the schnurrigkeit. Not everyone wants to be a schnurrigkeit. Giddy words, giddy is respectable. Most people want to lead a respectable life. And they're coming out of the ghetto. So there's a whole movement, particularly out of Shari Chesed, and I would advise some of you that have beards and dress in the uniform, don't walk in Shari Chesed, because the police may pick you up and question you. All right, I'll get you out of jail. But we have already one case of one individual who was questioned in Shari Chesed. He's sitting right here in this classroom, and I have to give credit to the secret police of the police force that a day later they made an attempt to apologize to him. I was very moved by what he told me. But the people are afraid, Rabbanim, of losing power. Not everyone comes from the world I come from. I've been a Rebbe for 58 years. Can I inherit? Should give strength. I need another to get all that I want to give. You have no idea what I'm working on now. I started Slabatka today. I finished Mir. I showed Jomo this morning a Mir that's 2 years worth of lectures looking right at you. And okay, gentlemen, I come from the Rav. I never told my students, I want you to be frum. You want to be like me, be like me. You want to be a chassid, be a chassid. You want to be a litvak, be a litvak. Be whatever you want. But you have freedom of choice, hashkafically. The underlying commitment is the Baruch Hashem Zu Halacha. It's the way the Rav raised us. The Rav never told the chassidish kid in front of him, become a litvak. It's unheard of in our circles. But there are other circles where you have to be exactly, they clone students. I don't mean to say clown, they clone students. And I'm not the, if you knew the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it's just amazing how many different types of people were attracted to him. And he never, when you came into him, your professor, he never said to you, stop doing what you're doing. Everyone has a different role in life. It depends on you, where your proclivities are, where your abilities are. And what's the word? Go ahead. You're correcting me? Correct me. Go ahead. Please. Are you looking it up? Okay.
Proclivity.
How do you pronounce it? Proclivities.
Proclivities.
Am I saying it right? And what did I say?
Proclivities.
Okay, so Mitzayin Gizun, you get the message. Abilities. You see, the machloket going on. Excuse me? The machloket going on today is beyond words. And in the Torah world itself, the Haredi part, you have no idea how deep the split is between Shari Chesed and Bnei Brak. So this is why, when it came to Geirut, my opinion, there was such a thrust to the right that if we start permitting this and Soha and Alon Shvut is involved in Geirut and the Beit Din of Rabbi Rosen, if we start permitting all this, we're losing our power, our influence, our people, our point of view.
Isn't there some real, rather risky? You yourself admitted that this is open orthodox.
Who wants that to do with open orthodox?
Solmet?
Solmet, not Sohar. Sohar is not risky. No, that's Beit Hillel. You're confusing two organizations. I just paskened La Halacha over the weekend that I would be happy to be a member of Tzoha. I would not be a member of Beit Hillel. I've just answered your question. Look into it. Okay, so I want to show you. You think I'm off base? Did you see Mochach of last Friday? This is Motzoi Shabbos, Mochach. It's the one of the magazines of Makor Rishon. Do you see the guy on the front, the picture? You know who he is? He's from, his father is a Hasidic Rebbe. He is from the most extreme rabbinic outlook in the state of Israel. It's from Reb Arla's family. He is a Roth. You've heard of Reb Arla, you know what I'm talking about. Shomer Munim HaGadol HaKotten, children are all over, Ashdod, Beit Shemesh, and he says in this article, word by word, what I have just stated in class. Word by word, he says, I'm a Haredi, I'm from the Roth family, but it's time to step out into the world. It's time not to be afraid. It's time that we can realize we don't have to be charity cases. We can go into the army, we can go to university, and we will remain 100% solid in our dedication. He's had an interesting life. I think he's 25, and you got to read the article to appreciate who he is, where he's coming from, what he's doing, his music, his diskettes, they say, are top quality. Very fascinating individual. Word by word, what I've said. So my own feeling, leave it for now, I want to teach. My own feeling is, this is a real problem, but it will ameliorate itself. Let me end off halacha l'maisa. What I would do is very simple. We have to do the best we can. I think that the Tzohar conversion program and Rabbi Rosen's Beit Din, and there may be another Beit Din or two in the country, what they do is very intelligent. They assign the would-be convert to a religious family. And they spend Shabbat and Yontif with the family. They see how to run a kitchen, what Kashrut is about, what Shabbat is about. And Kanayin Hara, I would say the success rate, I don't know what statistics are, but it far outweighs the loss where we lose out and they're not totally Shomer Mitzvah. I can tell you a year ago I spent the long Shabbat in Tel Aviv, visiting with my student Ariel Konstantin, who has created a shul that was dead, had 13 people Friday night. It now has 300 people Friday night. He learned the trade not just in this classroom, but he was the associate rabbi in the Hamptons, with Rabbi Mark Schneier, also a graduate of this Kollel. And I spent Shabbat there, and Thursday night, his father, who was a Holocaust survivor, who came in from America for the grandson's bar mitzvah, his father spoke to the conversion class, that's the Tzohar class in his shul, which he's one of the teachers, there's another wonderful teacher as well, and he spoke about how he survived the Holocaust and why he believes in God. And I have to say, I saw an audience that came from work. They were enthralled catching every syllable of the talk. Something else about Tzohar, which I think Rav Moshe would be overjoyed with, if they accept you into the class to study for conversion, they require you to bring the Jewish partner as well. If you're converting to get married, a woman, the man is Israeli, never learned a word about Yiddishkeit, graduated the school system here, doesn't even know how to make Birchat HaTorah, you know the stories, and he must attend the classes as well. If he's converting for her sake, she must attend the classes as well. I think that is fabulous. And we have to do the best we can. We're only human beings. We always have to remember that. Now, if someone converts, and there is certainly in Israel a basic Kabbalat mitzvah, everyone in Israel observes Pesach, everyone lights Shabbat candles, everyone observes Hanukkah, everyone builds a sukkah. Well, we've come a long way. And this may not be total observance, but it certainly is enough to say they're trying to be good Jews. But remember, my goal is total, complete, absolute observance. But b'di'eved, I'm not going to feel I'm a total loss if I don't win 100% of the time. And that's my approach, and you must read this article in Motschach, the interview with him. It's if he sat in the classroom last week, and he's repeating what I had to say word by word. Nevertheless, halacha l'maisa, don't walk in Sharei Chesed until the current demonstrations are over. And today there was big news with the usual scandals with psychologists involved, psychiatrists. Yeshiva boys appear before them, claim they're crazy. They pay them money. They found $100,000 in cash. It was on the radio today. The usual lo aleinu chilul Hashem. I can tell you, if I'm a psychologist, I'm not a psychiatrist, and a yeshiva boy comes to me and claims he's crazy, all I would do is open up a Gemara and discuss the sugya with him. And mimad of shach, if you can't discuss the sugya properly, you're a phony out of the yeshiva, you're a faker. And if you can discuss the sugya properly, how dare you say you're not mentally stable. Gentlemen, are you? Yeah, Romo, relax, relax. Manyan, sweet Eitzel Hasinai, think about it, think about it. I wish, all I can tell you is, I wish I would give what I wouldn't give to sit down with the Rav and throw all my ideas at him and battle him in halacha. What can I tell you? When I was a kid, I knew nothing. When I grew a little older, I did battle with the Rav. But today, Baruch Hashem, Rebbe, guide me, answer, explain. If we had the Rav here, we'd have a lot less problems. But life has to go on. We don't have a choice. And that's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made the world. As I've said more than once, Labriyot, I envy a chassid. He always has a Rebbe. And a Litvak has a Rebbe once in his life. The rest of his life, he lives on memories.
How about the descendants? Some of them are tremendous Talmidei Chacham.
Descendants of whom? Of whom?
Of your Rebbe.
You're telling me about, of course, some of them are trans, some of the Chacham.
There's lots of people who are experts in Shas and Poskim, and there's no one who could write Rubi Kashin Misham or the Halakhic Mind or say the Drush that you translated from 1975, and that's the big problem that we have.
Yeah, Herbie. Alex, just read me deeply. What I'm saying is, of course, that Talmidei Chachamim today, but my Rebbe was the Rav, is the Rav, and remains the Rav. I'm not like a chassid, a Belza chassid in 19, let me give you the exact date, 48, 1966, a kid 18 years of age, got married to the Vishnitz Rebbe's daughter, in B'nai Brak, they introduced the Nigan Simmin Tavu, Mazel Tavu, Mazel Tavu, Simmin Tavu. You know the hey, no, I have a voice. Kol Isha would be mutter in my case, but forget. I have some grandchildren with good voices. Anyway, an 18-year-old kid, what the heck did he know? And Chassidim, 80 years of age, stood in front of him and drank L'chaim, wouldn't drink until the Rebbe said L'chaim and cried like babies that there's a Belza Rebbe. You understand? That doesn't go in my world. But I have to tell you, wait till you hear what I have to say about what one of the Chassidim says about the Belza Rebbe in tomorrow's class with Rav Huttner. You're in for a treat.
I hope you lost a little weight. The current Belza Rebbe or Rabbi?
We're talking the current Belza Rebbe. Okay. He was 18. You know the story. Rabbi Arla had all 11 children.
He still holds that his uncle is really the Rebbe.
And the seventh Rebbe didn't hold that. The sixth Rebbe was still the Rebbe. That's part of Chassidim, because they inherit, their power is inherited from the previous Rebbe. But my world, the Rav is the Rebbe. Halavai, I could be a Chassid. I'm not any better than the Rav who cried, Halavai, I could be a Chassid. Remember, Yutet Kislev, he cried. Wait till you hear a Baron Soloveitchik tomorrow. Gentlemen, we now come to another tshuva, which people can't believe it really happened, but it happened. Mishnah Halachat, Reb Menashe Klein, our starting point. Chelik Yud Aleph, Volume 11, Siman Kuf Yud Aleph. It's not a play on words. Chelik Yud Aleph, Siman Kuf Yud Aleph. Excuse me one second. Okay, thank you. Sydney, Australia. There's no date on this. No date. You don't know who the chipper is to. Lichvod Yedidi Hayaka V'chulu Hashem Yishmerehu V'yimsarehu, but no name. Tells the following story. Today, as you all know, people live longer. Because people live longer, we have beautiful senior citizens' residences. It's become a tremendous business all over the world, including Israel. So in Sydney, there's a senior citizens, and they have a man who runs the services for them. They have a shul in the senior citizens. They evidently pay this person to run the services. I was in a hotel a number of weeks ago. We did it, the Sharon Hotel. I don't know if I had off Sunday or I taught Sunday, but I think we got. Yeah, we got back Saturday night. So in the Sharon Hotel, when was it? Oh, right before Sukkot, right before, there was no school. Right before Sukkot, because remember, I never told you about it. So it was my daughter, we wanted to get away, my daughter and my two grandsons, and Malcolm, myself, and we had a blast. And this Sharon Hotel caters to from people. It has a whole section with a, you know, automatic elevator Shabbat, nice shul, and they have someone hired. He's not the mashgiach. The mashgiach, the kitchen is a separate story. But they have someone hired to run the shul. He's there every Shabbat. He runs the shul. He's the Baal Korei. He can be the Baal Tfilah, then a Baal Tfilah. Baruch Hashem. So this person runs the shul. Now you have to understand, Australia is like England, South Africa. Again, all this is changing today. But the mentality there was very different from America. Mentality was a shul has to be a shul. What I do is a different story. You have endless shuls in the British Empire where totally orthodox shuls, the majority of the people are not Shema Shabbos. But when they go to shul, they have to go to a proper shul. Don't give me a half-baked conservative or liberal temple. Fine. So here in this senior citizens, you have a shul, and this shop's shliach tzibur is running the shul, and he looks around, and he sees all the people at the minyan are mechallelei Shabbos. Some of them don't even live in the area and they drive over to help make a minyan. And some of them live in the senior citizens complex and they're not Shema Shabbos. Mechallelei Shabbos. And listen what happened. I couldn't make this up. Shabbos morning, he's davening, he's the Baal Tefillah. Take out a Torah, the Kriyat Torah, and he reads all seven aliyot himself. Evidently made a bracha, a shabbach habanu, when he began, and when he finished the whole sedra, he made Hashanat alanu Torat emet. V'lo kara shum adam la'alot. Now, do you know Balabatan? These are Balabatan. They started to yell. They started to shout. They called him, he is a moron. What are you doing? And you have to understand, why isn't the rabbinate? God have mercy if you don't give a person an aliyah before his yahrzeit. You know how many young Yisraels were started because a balabas walked away insulted? He wanted maftir and he didn't get it. Right or wrong, except the young Yisraels. You know what that is in America. All over the place. Today, everything is different today, but historically, and they said, what are you doing? The asurim La'alot la'Torah. Mechalalei Shabbos. These people got home. They called their friends. They called their neighbors. It's like Malkus says, when I come home from my first minyan and wake her up to go to Hushu, right? Reason, what happened at the minyan? You know, what gossip? What did you pick up? What did you learn? What happened? Who fought with whom? We used to have it, you know, davening at this minyan 48 years now. So until there were two people, very important people in the shul. The rabbi, who was a Litvish Talmud Chacham, yet studied with Rav David Lifshitz in Grodno. And there was the founder of the neighborhood, an old-time Israeli here, 100 generations, Meitalmidei Hagra, Ettinger was the last name, a very famous name, Ettinger. One of the old-time families here. He was a milkman. A milkman. Delivered milk. You don't remember those days when they delivered milk. First they would deliver in a truck and pour into a bottle. Then later they would deliver bottles. It's a different Israel than when I came in Aliyah. It was a milkman. A chalvan. But Bucky and Shas, what a London. He could give a shia. Every Shabbos, he and the rabbi fought. Every Shabbos. I remember what would go on. They would say a Kaddish, because we didn't say the Kabbanot aloud. But many people did say quietly Kabbanot, and they would say Kaddish the Rabbanon. And the rabbi would yell aloud and start Mizmah Shir and drowning, not allowed to say Kaddish. And he would say the Kaddish loud and clear. Oh, what went on? One time was Shabbos Reish Chodesh, and they had a fight over the Seder. Oh, we play the
Shalom. Play the steps.
Right, it's named in his memory. You know why it's named in his memory? He was the first Jew in the neighborhood. Rechavya was established. I'll give you a little.
Play the steps named there.
That's right. Ma'alot Yitzchak Tzvi Ettinger. He was the first Jew in the neighborhood. What happened was, as they were breaking out of the Yishuv Hayashan, Rechavya was established. Well, you won't believe it today. Natanya, you know why Rechavya was established? To get away from the Yishuv Hayashan and the Frumkeit. All the Hebrew professors lived there. Martin Buber lived there. All the Germans who came, none of them were religious. They lived there in the 20s, 30s. So in 1929, Reb Yitzchak Ettinger comes to the adjacent neighborhood to Rechavya and starts building a building. The Arabs come and shoot at him. He shoots back and they never shot again. That was the first building. It doesn't stand anymore. A new house was built on where it stood. They knocked it down. But Kol Zman he was alive, the building stood, and he called the neighborhood Kiryat Shmuel in memory of Reb Shmuel Salant to show that it's a frum neighborhood. Today, if I tell people I live in Kiryat Shmuel, they think I live in Haifa, because the neighborhood, so everyone calls it Rechavya, but the neighborhoods have blended today. In other words, I would say 80% of the neighbor of both Rechavya and Kiryat Shmuel are Shomer Shabbos. I mean, Shabbos, you don't see a car on the street, basically, outside of Aza, which is a main thoroughfare, cars going up and down, the hospital, Arabs, whatever, Jews, lo aleinu, but not on the side streets. It's unbelievable what has happened. And it overflows into Katamon today, which today is like an extension of Rechavya, the part of Katamon right near, right next to Kiryat Shmuel Rechavya. So every Shabbos they would fight. So the Balabatim got home and they spread the word. By Saturday night, Sydney was a kadachat. Everyone was talking, this man is crazy, look what he did. And they fired him. So this Jew evidently was a Chassidish Jew, I would imagine, a Holocaust survivor living in Sydney. He turned to Rabbi Menashe Klein and asked him, what is your opinion? So Rabbi Menashe Klein says, look, it's very hard for me to give you an answer. I don't know all the details. But he goes into the whole discussion of Mechalalei Shabbos, everything we spoke about, quoting the Gemara in Chulin, quoting the Gemara, quoting the Pesach that a Mechalalei Shabbos is considered an old veit kachavim. His yayin is stam yayinam, his bread is patakum. On the other hand, bizman hazeh, he quotes the Gedolim from Germany, and who claim that since the majority of Jews are not observant, the Mechalal Shabbos no longer has that status. It's not that he hates Judaism, not that he wants to worship idols. It's simply lack of understanding. He's westernized. Frumkeit is a choice. It's not an obligation. What's very interesting, he quotes here, who supports the German Rabbanim? Who supports Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger? He quotes the Masham, Rav Shlomo Mordechai Shvatan, the Brzezina Rav. The Brzezina Rav was a gaon adir. We're talking, if you read, his name comes up quite prominently in Rakaf Aharon Chelek Gimel. The Brzezina Rav, a gaon adir. Baruch Atah Adonai Melech Haolam Shekoni Yemitzarav. Amen. But because he was a Gaon, there was a tendency, lahakel, when you know a lot and have self-confidence. I'll tell you a private conversation I had with the Rav. We were talking about Treifat. All of you know that Rav Chaim Brisker was a big makehill in Treifat. Many psakim he gave went against the general grain, but he was a makehill. So the Rav was telling me, yeah, my Zayda was a makehill, but the people didn't really know about him in this area. So I said to him, well, how come no one criticized your grandfather, your Zayda? No one criticized it. People know, all right, a makehill. And the Brzezina Rav, the Masham, was he criticized? Was there machlokes with some of his kulat, particularly in Treifat? So the Rav answered, smiling and laughing, "My Zaydot had seichel. My grandfather had seichel. He didn't publish his kulis. The Brzezina Rav published many volumes of Sheinat Utshuvat Mahasham. By the way, it's his grandson. Do you recognize the name of Shlomo Mordechai Shvagun, who was the Magid of Yerushalayim? And his grandson spoke many times in this very building when BMT was here. And he had that ability. He spoke Hebrew, a little Yiddish, not English. But the kids understood his Hebrew. He could excite American kids. He was a tremendous magid. That's a grandson named after his grandfather. So the Masham agreed with the German poskim. You'll see all the sources in the Tshuva. Who disagreed, and he quotes him, no, take a guess, the Minchat Lazar. You follow? The Minchat Lazar. He already disagreed. The Munkacha. You understand? In Munkach, they could not start to conceive of what the Sholem Meshiv is talking about, what the Melamed Lahoyel is talking about. How can a Jew, Machalo Shabbos, he's not a Jew anymore. Machalo Shabbos, Rebbeinu Shalom, the Minchat Loza couldn't agree. So he quotes, what's your problem, Yomar? He quotes his various opinions. Yeah?
Jews on Machalo Shabbos and not Jews. Who was he talking to on the camera at his daughter's wedding?
He's talking about the Jews in America. He's crying, but let me tell you.
He's considering them Jews.
Let me tell you something. You got to understand. You got to understand this mentality. Satmar had the same mentality. Now it's starting to change because they're integrating into the modern world. If you're not a Shomer Shabbos, lo mitchashvim becha. They don't reckon with you. So he's talking to Jews in America. There, he's pleading with them to remain Shomer Shabbos, but he's not aware that they're Jews. They're Jews. They're born Jews. But he's not saying you can count them for a million. He's not saying you can give them Kriyat HaTorah. He's not saying you can make them a Shliach Tzibur. But then, gentlemen, Chaparayim, take a look. Yeah, and the Mishnah Halachit says this. What happened here? Look what happened. He took all the aliyot for himself. Okay? He's the only Shomer Shabbos there. Tell me, don't you need a minion to read the Torah? Isn't that the Mishnah in Megillah? Don't you need a minion? Absolutely. Yeah, but if they're Machala Le Shabbos, how do they count for the minion? Either they can get aliyot, they're Jews. And if they can't get aliyot, how do you have a minion? Anyway,
could be.
But he says, Rav Menashe Klein says, Mimanavshach, it's difficult what happened. Either don't count them, and if you count them, call them up to the Torah. Either they're going Gemurim, or we're coming on to many Heterim. He says, I don't know. Natan, get a few fellas to come up to him. Okay, thanks. I don't know why he differentiates the Yimhu Kagoy Gomor, Litzeref La Sara Nami Lo Mitzaref. The Yim Lav, and if he could count them, Lama Lo Yala La Torah. Why don't they come to the Torah? And he says what Alex says here. It could be that he wanted to differentiate that to make a minion. We count every Jew, even Amam Aretz, but the call to the Torah, we're not going to call on Amam Aretz, but he says, I don't know, that's not an answer. We'd have to ask the Shlir Tzibur, did he know what he was doing? Could be it was just the motion. Anyway, he says, everything I've written to you is not for halacha and not lema'aseh. I don't really know what exactly happened there, and therefore I cannot give you a psak. But you see, what a fascinating question. And I'll comment on this in 1 second. Yomo, what's up?
Could it be he was of the opinion that Kriyas HaTorah is Kovos Yachid and he was trying to be Motzi himself?
If he be a Lamdan like that, what you're saying is it's a Chova on every Yachid, but it's a Shtel Tzuchuf, you have to have a minion, no matter what you do. You know, it's a Chova. Reb Chaim held that way, that it was a Chova on every Yachid.
But you need a minion.
Yeah, but you need a minion. It's for the Kiyum
HaDavar. Do you use those Jews that
Nechal HaShabbos, can you use them for a Zimun? My answer would be yes, but you could get involved with the same question.
Was this the first week this guy was working? Did he know where he was working?
We don't have details. You're asking a good question. Doesn't know where, but you're asking a good question. But let me say something. And on this tshuva, when I was a kid, who ever exposed us to responsa literature? We learned Shas and we learned Poskim. We never ever were exposed to responsa literature. Right or wrong, you go to yeshiva, you go many years. So what happened was, in my case, a book came out published by JPS by a Reform rabbi, Solomon Freehoff. Solomon Freehoff later published 2 books that are fabulous on response literature. And you have to see those books to understand what he did. Totally orthodox, nothing to do with any reform. He was actually chairman of the Jewish Law Committee of the Reformed Rabbinate, the Central Conference, I think it's called. And Solomon Freehoff had a chavruta, Rabbi Zev Leiter, the Orthodox Big Talmud Chacham Rabbi of Pittsburgh. I taught grandchildren of his. He has many great-grandchildren living in Eretz Yisrael. So that's how I first was introduced to responsa literature. Then I have to tell you what happened. I write about this in Washington, and it's an absolute true story. In my first shteller, at the end of a few weeks, they wanted to get rid of me. You can imagine with the wine incident, which I've never been able to solve that problem until today. I have nachat, the person who offered me the treif wine, is a total from Jew today. He turned around 180% later in life. But I never was able to solve that problem. And they were really mistreated me. I was a young kid of 23. It could have totally broken me. And, people walked out when I got up to speak. So I was smart enough to reach a very simple conclusion. What was the conclusion? I said, who am I, 23 years of age, to give, let's say, give sermons, these people, professors, medical doctors, business people, and something.
Maplewood or before?
No, not Maplewood. This is Lower Merion Synagogue. God forbid, not Maplewood. Maplewood's a different crowd altogether. Here, it's people who are Shomer Shabbos, that are very modern. Read Washington. I describe it in detail. So I make an announcement that the pulpit belongs to the rabbi, but I'm not going to preach anymore. I'm going to turn it into an educational vehicle. And I'm beginning a 6-week series on the responsa literature of Reb Moshe Feinstein. And I prepared this the first time because I was always enthralled with Reb Moshe. I knew Reb Moshe personally. I spoke and learning with Reb Moshe. And here I have his volumes. The volumes are starting to come out. And I want to tell you, I began that series. The first week, a few people walked out. A second week, place filled to capacity. The third week, standing room only. People walked from Winfield all over. And that changed my whole life, that series. Now, then I got involved in responsa literature. And I went through, when I came to Israel, the first book I bought in Israel was Abraham Chaim Friedman, Zeicher Tzaddik Livracha, Professor Friedman, German origins, Hildesheim, a Hebrew Jew, killed by our friends from Jordan going up to the Mount Scopus. Remember, 78 people were mowed down. God, have a convoy, what we've gone through. And I went through his book, Seder Kedushin V'Nisuin, and that opened my eyes. And then I went in when the Kollel began. I figured I have to teach something no one else can teach, and I developed the course that began in 78 and continues ongoing with many, many more years I have what to give in this world. Now, what's fascinating about responsa literature is it's a reflection of life. I've said, and I think it's quoted in the introduction to Rakafat Aaron Chelik Gimel, there's no life without halacha, no halacha without life. And responsa literature is like a mirror. And it is so very fascinating, because what comes up in life, sometimes you say, if it was a novel, I wouldn't believe it. I would say, this guy has gone too far out. And could you imagine, this is a serious tshuva, dealing with a guy who comes into the senior citizens, he davens for mamet, leads the service, they reach Kriyat HaTorah, and he reads the whole Torah, everyone is a Mechal El Shabbos, he won't call them up. Nu, mimela. But where do you have a minion? We don't know how to resolve it. This is the quandary. We don't know all the details. But either count them for a minion and call them up, which is what I did in Maplewood, or you can't count them and you can't read the Torah. Decide. You can't stand on the fence. My own reaction is that the Shliach Tzibur was not a great Talmud Chacham. He was a nice Jew, a good Jew, an upkehit the Yid. And he acted impulsively. On one hand, there was a minyan. He wanted to daven. He wanted to read the Torah. As Yomo says, he wanted to be Yotzei Yizkiyuv. But this is the minyan. If he doesn't count these 10 people, Elikindrad, he has no minyan. He has to walk out. That's the way I would understand it from afar.
There's an idea of it's a minion, but I don't want to give specific kavod to somebody.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the way he reacted on the spot. In the American rabbinate, when I came to Maplewood, had I not counted Mechal El Shabbos for the minion, the shul wouldn't get off the floor. But I feel very strongly that the people I dealt with in Maplewood, South Orange, I was dealing with people who really were tinokot shenishba'u, exactly that mentality. This is the greatness of Chabad, and it doesn't surprise me that the shul that I worked so hard and put in blood, sweat, and tears, and succeeded. I went in Aliyah from there. Of course, when I left, it was a sad moment for them. I was the only rabbi they knew, and they were so upset my leaving. And they were crying at their hangs in my office here, the invitation to the farewell breakfast the day before we sailed. And people were crying at the breakfast. And I said, what are you crying? I'm going to Yerushalayim. But I understand them. Today the shul is bigger. It's in the hands of Chabad. It never became a major, major shul because of the housing problems there. It's all one-family homes. The neighborhood remained very good, even though it's integrated, but it's very decent. High-class people live there, whether they're Afro-American or whether Jewish or non-Jewish. Their lawns are nice. Their homes are nice. It's a nice neighborhood. And it has the advantage it's not that far from New York City. Their buses, their trains, well, mainly I don't know how close the train is, but the bus certainly goes right from Maplewood to Port Authority. And that neighborhood, because we succeeded with an Orthodox shul, you now have the story of Livingston, which gives birth to the family, Kushner family. Who would ever dream that Abba Livingston, out of Essex County, out of that area.
Originally
from Elizabeth, which was Union County. You were not Essex County. You were Union County. But because we got off the floor with an Orthodox shul, then Livingston developed an Orthodox community. Milburn developed an Orthodox community. South Orange, further up the mountain, developed an Orthodox community. Elizabeth and Young Israel of Newark, but the first ones to succeed in planting in the ground outside Newark and Elizabeth proper was Maplewood, New Jersey. Baruch Hashem. But that's some tshuva, and we can never really understand what happened. We can only guess. I think my guess is good, but like any guess, maybe I'm right. You can't say for sure. Period. Finally, let me just set the stage. When we meet again in 2 weeks' time, again, I want to make clear. Oh, so I'll explain to you. I'm going to Eilat based upon Rav Hirsch's answer. You know what I'm talking about? It's very simple. My wife has never been to Eilat. We're living here 48 years. I was to Eilat once, 1970, with BMT, when the doctor told me to get a change of scenery. I wasn't feeling that good. And I went with Eilat, with BMT, and it was a little community there, and we slept on the beach. That's what I remember about Eilat. The patrols were going back and forth all night. It was facing Aqaba, and I remember we had a BMT boy, I think the name was Dvek. It's 1970, I don't remember exactly, but it was a Sephardic boy from Flatbush. The boys all spoke Hebrew then, the Flatbush graduates certainly. And they stop the army patrol, and they start up a conversation with this, the Israelis, American kids talking, same age. They were all, let's say, 18, 19. And it turns out they were second cousins. Dvek talking to Dvek. But their grandfathers had two wives. So there were so many descendants that they really didn't keep track of each other. But it turned out they were second cousins. So that's my prime memory of Eilat. But now to go back, so they met Reb Shimshon Hirsch at the train station. He was going with his wife to Switzerland, to visit Switzerland, the Alps. So they said to him, Herr Rabbiner, how do you leave your study, your work, your lectures to go on a tiyul? And he answered, because at my age, I want to be able to face the Ribbono Shel Olam, who say to me, Shamshan, have you seen the wonders of the world that I created? I want to say, yes, I saw the Alps. So that's the first part of why I'm going. But Steve, the real answer is Shalom Bayit. And I'll let you figure out the rest. So next week, every year I go, I miss 2 weeks. This year it's only 1 week. I'm not going to Florida. But Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, Sunday, Monday, there are no classes. But the week afterwards, I pick up.
It's a different world there.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll let you know when I get back. My nephew was a Rosh Kollel there for many years. He's now in the yeshiva they built coming out of Gush Katif, he's now the Rosh Yeshiva. Yeah.
Is a lot considered Eretz Yisrael?
Oh, no, I gave lectures on that ad infinitum, but not for now. Halacha l'maisa b'zman hazeh, you can be samach on Rav Herzog's tshuva, on Rav Sadia Gaon's tirgum, and I'll see with my own eyes how close the yeshiva is as their continuity. They say there's much more continuity today, which would help in the question. But if you want to be at Tzadik and Eilat, second day don't do malacha. You follow? You can be out, say, lechol
adayat. What about
Birchas Kanim? You can do all the time. That's not a problem. The question is why they don't do it in Jamaica Estates, in Hollisport. Say that there you go.
They don't do it either.
Not every day, but on Yom Tov and they do it.
Here,
Yom Tov, Shabbos, they do it. Shabbos, they do it. Okay, so 1 second. I just want to set the next question. We're shifting gears now. The next question is one that you will find extremely fascinating. Gentlemen, we're about to daven Maariv. Am I allowed to daven Maariv dressed the way I am without a hat? Oh boy. Think about it. That's the next question. Wait till you see the sources. So to reiterate, what did we do today? We finished out Reb Moshe. Very fascinating question. The Kinsari Nebuch, those questions come up so many times. What we rabbis have gone through in America, the crowd doesn't appreciate. Today everyone is from, but it was not like that until recently. We do deserve a lot of credit for creating a world where everyone is from. It was a tremendous struggle. And I can't take all the credit. RCA can't take all the credit. Why you can't take all the credit? We have to remember what the Lubavitcher Rebbe has accomplished. He literally made Torah observance fashionable. It's an amazing what one man.
Do you know Moshe Billig?
Of course, of course.
Moshe Billig and I were classmates.
In pharmaceutical school.
The only two guys, author of Thomas.
Right. And but the Rebbe, what he accomplished. Now, what's very interesting today is Mochach that I showed you. That article is like word by word what we said last week. Now, the freebies. Herbie, you got the phone number. If anyone wants this, I would like someone's opinion. You have to understand modern Hebrew. I think this guy is off the wall. I don't think this is Yiddishkeit.
What's his name?
His name is Harav Yigal Kohen. Got to hear what he talks about, that if we learn in a kollel to get 3,000 shekel a month, even if we worked as medical doctors, we'd still get the 3,000 shekel a month. Everything is determined by God. A Rosh Yeshiva tells him off, and you see the answer he gives, I can't believe it. It's Nishke Steigen and Nishke Flagen. Then he carries on that everything, if your wife yells at you, don't be mad at her. Because if you're mad at her, it's like you're mad at God. God determined that she should yell at you. The whole concept of Hishtadlut is missing. Hakol Safui v'harishut Natuna. If someone will take this and listen to it, I'll be very happy to hear your opinion. Now, are you aware, online, all of Shas is now available free of charge?
Not all Shas. Only 22 Masechtas.
22 Masechtas that they're putting on my... How do you pronounce it? Sefaria.
Sefaria.
I just put it on my... what do you call it? Your favorite list. Yomo, help me. And it works. Everything is available. What a world.
But it will be full Shas.
Yeah, no, I understand. A brother of a Talmud of this kollel gave $1 million... for them to put on the new Steinsaltz English version of the Shas. Here's a story about a Haredi man who is building a multi-billion dollar Gulevich Gate in New York in Times Square, going to be an unbelievable tourist attraction. What a world. Here's, those of you interested in Russia, they're now loosening the laws, so if you beat up your kids, you don't go to jail. Read it. Fascinating. Here is Reform Catholicism. German bishops open way to communion for divorced Catholics from the New York Times. Unbelievable. Interview with Rabbi Eli Baruch Schumann, a YU Rosh Yeshiva. Very fascinating article. Finally, anyone here who knows about the Bronx, an interview with Bernard Kaplan, a Solanta graduate, a police officer in the Bronx, an oral interview done 25 years ago, approximately. Very, very fascinating. My dear students, tomorrow morning I witness Shir at 9:05. Oh boy, we're dealing with Rav Putner, we're dealing with the bells, we're dealing with the machloket. What happened here? The answer I got, we will be dancing on the tables. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, wow. And Simon, please come. I must straighten that out in front of your eyes. I'm very upset. You sent it again. I never received it. Sherry never received it. I stood over her while she hunted for it. And again, it didn't show up. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya, Michael, give out the sidurim. Give out the sidurim.